Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast. This is Manuel Amos, the host of the podcast. And as always, I have Michael Kimsel here with me to talk about interesting JavaScript topics. Hello, Michael.
Good morning to you.
Hello. I suppose, at least for me, it should be good evening, but I think you are thinking in China time zone.
I'm thinking in Chinese time. Good morning to all our Chinese listeners. Xie xie.
I was expecting something in a foreign language.
Yes, this time was Chinese. See.
Well, this month we have several interesting JavaScript-related topics to talk about. Some specific to JavaScript, others more broad in terms of matters that to JavaScript developers as well. And I would like to start mentioning that after all these years of the history of JavaScript, finally it seems somebody realized that JavaScript would need an official logo, because so far I think nobody realized that it would be important to have a common logo for to represent the language. Actually, I realized that there was eventually that need, not just to represent the language, but maybe probably a mascot, like there is the penguin for Linux and the elephant for PHP and others. And,
the mouse for Disney, Mickey Mouse, yeah.
Yeah. Well, but we are talking about languages and computer-related stuff, and, well, I'm not sure who's the father of the idea, but from what I read, Chris Williams of JSConf fame came up with a simple but hopefully effective way to represent the JavaScript language, and it is available in several formats in GitHub. And well, from now on, I hope everybody adopts the same representation. It's nothing special, but I think this it was something that was necessary. Now I just think it probably JavaScript would also need a mascot or something else that would be more catchy.
You think? Could you? I don't know if you can get more catchy than this logo. It's yellow,
it's just the letters,
and black, and it. I didn't see anything specifically about saying if the color is part of it, if it or not.
Yeah.
But there is, to me, this looks very much like an Adobe, like it's part of the Adobe Creative Suite. It's the same style of a color and then just a couple of letters underneath, like. If you replace JS with CF, this would look like the Cold Fusion logo. And this is not a criticism. I'm not bitching or complaining. It's just that's what I'm wondering if Adobe might actually say something, because this looks so much like the Adobe styling.
Yeah.
But we shall see.
I don't know if that they use a font that is actually owned by somebody, but probably not. Probably they already took care of those concerns before.
The note here on one of the pages I'm looking at says it's been used for a year prior by the community. I don't recall having seen it around, but
me neither.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess we're in different communities. So.
Well, it's probably a bit like in the Java and the PHP world. There is PHP developers, and there are the WordPress developers and the Drupal developers and Joomla developers, and sometimes it seems they don't communicate, and maybe it was something in JavaScript world, like jQuery developers are not talking with Node.js developers and other types of JavaScript developers, and maybe it's a more restricted community that did work on this logo proposal. Well, we are here trying to pass the message now that there is at least a proposal for a common JavaScript logo. go ahead, spread it, and use it wherever.
Use it wisely. Use it with pride. Use it. Make bumper stickers out of it. Ooh, it is under the W2FPL public license. Therefore, I could make T-shirts with it. I could make bumper stickers, mouse pads. That'd be awesome.
You can use on magazines.
Could use it on a magazine. I'm not going to, but I could. I think maybe tennis shoes or running shoes with a J and an S on each shoe would be pretty good.
Yes, I think should use in your magazine, or else you don't belong to the same community.
I belong to my own community. Salt and pepper shakers with J. One is J and one is an S. That'd be pretty good too.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if you have salt and pepper shakers down in Brazil.
Well, yeah.
Okay. Just checking.
Okay. Moving on with the podcast now, I like to talk about something that is somewhat related. It is a lot related, although it's not exactly the same thing, which is the announcement of the Dart language, a project developed by Google. And this is a new language, somewhat very similar to JavaScript, but from what I understood, it is meant to overcome certain oddities of the JavaScript language. I don't know if I'm interpreting the intentions correctly. Michael, what did you get about this project? Is there a place for yet another JavaScript-like language that will have success?
I don't know. I'm slightly frustrated with this because Google, this is what, their second or third new language that they introduce, Go being what, there's another one that's escaping my mind, but Go was something, and that was going to be a big deal, and I don't think it has become a big deal, and people will say it's only targeted at a small certain use case. In one sense, I applaud the idea of let's innovate, let's try new things. I'm not sure that this is really solving too many problems. Now, it would be nice if this was something that was built into browsers and you didn't have to do the compilation step and all that. That might be something. No. But if you look at it, this isn't that much different, from my view, than Microsoft trying to introduce, well, let's not use JavaScript, let's use JScript in the browser. Let's introduce our own version of something.
Yeah.
And that's incompatible. And they kind of get their they get raked over the coals for that. And granted, a lot of that was a decade ago, but somehow now it should be more acceptable because it's Google, and somehow they're nice guys or nice people. I don't know. I'm not seeing enough about what Dart is necessarily solving that. It seems incremental in a way, over, even though what we may be getting from it is easier than a combination of the tools that we have now. I haven't seen anything in it that is radically different, so yeah, radically better than the current state of things.
Well,
so,
from what I got, it's the JavaScript done more similar to Java, I think. At least from the syntax.
And I don't know if that
architecture is what it seems to me. I don't know if that is correct interpretation of their intentions.
But a lot of that could be achieved. Well, from a syntax standpoint, some of that could be achieved with something like CoffeeScript. Now, CoffeeScript wouldn't be it, but something else that takes a different syntax and compiles down to quote unquote native JavaScript. If it's just a syntax that they're saying, well, we need better syntax, and I don't think it's just that. They're talking about having more or having different structures under the hood. It feels like it will be a niche thing. If it actually ever gets bundled into browsers, I think it would just be in Chrome. And to the extent that people use it, it would be very fracturing. It would be no different than writing JScript for IE6.
And there
may be valid reasons, valid use cases for somebody to do that because it solves a specific niche need. But it just feels like this is just going to be a niche. Like, even Google can't introduce necessarily new things. Something that would be far less what's the word I'm looking for? Controversial is the WebM stuff from what, a year or two ago. Let's introduce a new graphic file format. That hasn't even really taken on, I think, to the extent that it probably should have. And there's less controversy there. There's less. There's more easily understood benefits. This is a smaller portable format, royalty free, blah blah blah. And even that hasn't taken off. So it seems like it's going to be hard for anybody to introduce any drastic changes to the web as it stands, even Google. Yeah. But that's just my, you know, I know I'm not really talking about the technical aspect of it too much. I've seen the tutorials. I've watched a couple of videos. I haven't run it myself, so I can't speak as to does this make programming really, really awesome. I don't know.
Well, for me, I may be getting it wrong, but I don't see much future for any, not just Dart, any of the language that try to be JavaScript a little different. Because
if anything, I would agree. At my view would be because we're embracing JavaScript in more areas now. The things like server-side JavaScript, the Rhino script, I mean the Rhinos, the Nodes, Helmas, all that sort of stuff. We're trying to get JavaScript in more areas now. And if we're to say now, let's, you know, like something like this 5 years ago might have made a bigger splash, but because people have come to embrace JavaScript so much more deeply and strongly, both in the browser and now it's spreading out outside of the browser, trying to introduce something else that is not JavaScript, I think I just think it's doomed to failure. I may be wrong. I've been wrong three times this year so far.
But okay, well, we don't know, but maybe this is a part of a bigger thing from Google. But since we don't know that yet, so far I don't see much future. Other than that, I also saw certain criticisms that were quite compelling against the language, like the fact that when it converts to JavaScript, which is a possibility, the compiler generates much more code than you would write.
Yeah.
When if you do it by hand.
Certainly that could be something that could be fixed and iterated over time. But I saw that criticism too. You can run Dart or have it compiled to JavaScript, and hey, it's bad JavaScript. I would trust that if anybody can iterate and make their compiler better, it's going to be Google or people at Google. That was to me one of the lesser criticisms. But I mean, goodness, I'm a huge Groovy fan. I love Groovy. Java done right, Java next, whatever you want to call it. I mean, that's what the Groovy supporters really say. This is a superset of Java. It's Java, but it's got so much benefits to it. Makes all your syntax easier. It reduces boilerplate. All this stuff.
Yeah.
And that has not taken off. I should say it has not exploded like I really had hoped it would. It's about as easy to integrate. You're not really replacing Java. You're just extending it, and even that hasn't taken off. So I think trying to challenge a very established technology, especially one that is growing and evolving, and trying to come up with a replacement for it, it just seems a fool's errand.
Yeah.
That said, if anybody could do it, somebody like Google probably could, but I don't know. I just don't have high hopes for this.
Well,
I'm not sure I want to have high hopes for it anyway.
Yeah. Well, my in sum, I would say the world does not need any more languages to do precisely the same as the current languages do.
Yeah.
So maybe a new language will make sense to a new type of application that it is just being introduced. Now for usual purposes like the web or even server side on which JavaScript is being used now, I don't think there is much space for a new language. Well, but
yeah.
What do you know about the future? You never know. Maybe we are wrong. So
I'll know more about it later on when it's gone.
Yeah. We have to wait and see where this goes. As you said, Google already introduced several other languages that did not take off. I suspect this is yet another of those projects that was done on 20% of the time of a Google employee, and somebody thought it could stick for some reason.
They end up learning something from it, either from a programmatic standpoint or just from community feedback, that's great.
Yeah, but anyway, This is just talking about something that is recent and probably we'll forget it very soon. Moving on and talking something that you probably will not forget because it is going to be introduced is about this Amazon Silk browser, which is going to be introduced in the first Amazon Android-based tablet.
Fire. The Kindle Fire.
Now with sound effects.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That should be their sound, just like Intel has a sound. Boop, boop,
boop, boop. Yeah.
Oh, no. That was close. That's their sound. Yeah. Amazon, if you're listening.
You still have time.
Yeah. They could just cut that out of the podcast, and that could be the boot sound. Like every time you swipe a page or you turn a page.
So are you licensing the sound effects for free?
It's Creative Commons attribution. So every time that happens, there needs to be a link pop up that has my picture on it.
That will be fine.
Yeah, or they can pay me, or they can pay me some money. It's like that's like a quarter of a U.S. penny every time that sound is played. I'd be happy with that. That's I'm not asking for much.
Okay, no, seriously.
What? I was serious.
Okay.
Because that's what Fire sounds like. The Kindle Fire. That's it.
I'm glad that you explained it, or else we would not relate.
How effect. Is the woman who does the translate the transcription? How is she? Hello, what's her name? Mary? It's not Mary. Hello. How is she gonna? She's gonna cut all this out.
No, she just in closing brackets sound effects.
Here. Okay, just that. Yeah. Let's try to spell that. W H S H F P H W S H F W, I think. Smiley face.
Yeah.
Carry on. I didn't mean to digress so much.
Well, but back to this Silk browser. The reason why I thought it would be interesting to talk about it, it's not just because it is yet another browser, but some things that got my attention, specifically. About the way that, according to their announcement, it is supposed to accelerate the web access experience for at least those Amazon tablet users that will be enjoying the navigation with this Silk browser. And from what I got, and it's still not very clear to me, I confess, is that when they serve a page, it will be through some kind of a proxy that knows in advance what would be the parts of pages that will require for subsequent requests to render the page, like for instance JavaScript and CSS and other images and so on. So by the time that the page is served, the web server is, their proxy will be ready to serve the page with all its components very quickly. And it will be eventually even quicker if those components are served from the Amazon cloud hosting or somewhere inside their network. And this is the what I got from their announcement. I'm still not sure if this is the correct interpretation, but in the end, what this means is that the web navigation experience for the Amazon tablet users will be faster, and this probably will make a difference. We don't know yet because the tablet was not yet released. It's just a few weeks ahead until they announce it. Michael, did you got anything other than this, or maybe a different idea from what I got? Okay.
My interpretation isn't that much different than yours. This reminds me some of the Opera proxy. Mobile Opera, I think by default, operates through a proxy at Opera through Opera servers, which can prefetch or fetch information for you, compress it, and send it down. I think what may be going on is when you request something through the Kindle Fire, it goes through the Amazon system, and there's some JavaScript processing, or there may be JavaScript processing that happens in effectively a virtual browser running in their server, and some calculations may be done there. So if there's more services or more things that need to be fetched and processed, that could be happening at the server level, and the results of that could be sent down rather than your device requesting those pieces and then doing calculations on your device. Yeah. That's how I understand it. So it seems like it may be the Opera mobile proxy system with some more intelligence, with some JavaScript processing on the server. But I don't yet have my own Kindle Fire, so I can't tell for certain. I can't verify that. Yeah. And I say yet, but I probably won't be getting a Kindle Fire unless somebody listening out there has one and would love to send me one. You can send it to 40 Glen Oaks, Youngsville, North Carolina, 27596, U.S. of A. Address...
It could be a company from Seattle.
Well, the mailbox, I will say the mailbox at that address is large enough to hold a Kindle Fire.
Yeah.
I checked the dimensions a few days ago, so I brought up my ruler. It does fit.
Could be a demo. Your demo just for reviewing purposes?
Well, it could just be because somebody listening wants to send me one. I'm not putting any pressure on anybody, and I don't even want to name drop Jeff Bezos. I don't want to name drop because I don't know him. anyway, that said, that's my interpretation of what's going on. But I did read something where Opera's reaction was, "Hey, Amazon, you're 5 years late," but I suspect that Amazon probably wouldn't just copy what Opera was doing, because there may be if they copied it exactly, there may be some IP issues or some patent issues going on. So they've probably done something different and better than what Opera was doing.
Well, they basically are serving it from their own cloud, and they have their own CDN, so it is probably faster worldwide. Now, regarding the actual implementation, well, we don't know yet, because at least for me, the exact concept they are using there, I don't know yet. This is just an interpretation which could be eventually wrong. Well, I guess we have to wait and see. I don't plan to buy a tablet at all of any brand anytime soon. We don't know.
If for some reason I happen to get two at my mailbox at 40 Glen Oaks, Youngsville, North Carolina, 27596, I will send one to you.
Okay. Said,
if two happen to, they might be stuck together, and I'd have to maybe wash them and separate them.
Okay.
Yeah. It's happened.
We have to wait and see, because for what concerns JavaScript developers that could be listening to this podcast, I think they probably have to anticipate that possibility that their JavaScript is at least pre-executed on the server.
Yeah.
And
that'd be interesting to see.
If
that
is the case, yeah. That's just an interpretation what we will do. And we'll have to see if that will change anything. I think whatever they do, they'll try to make it compatible with what the current browsers do. But let's see if this somehow affects the user experience on matters related with JavaScript contained in the web pages. Okay. Well, moving on with the podcast, this month I also like to comment on an interesting library named Jison, which is basically a JavaScript parser generator. And for those not familiar with what this kind of tools do, parser generators, it's basically useful for generating code that will interpret or even execute code in some other language. So basically you give it a syntax of the language, And this JSON tool, which is similar to other tools written in other languages like Bison for I think it's C or C++ that it generates.
C, I think.
Yeah. So JSON is the basically the JavaScript version of Bison. And this could be interesting in case you need to create a piece of code that needs to interpret a language. And although this is not a usual need in an everyday project, it may be interesting for any specific application that you may have, and you would like to develop a language interpreter without having to learn all about compilers and parser technology, which probably would give you a lot of work if you had to try to do it all by hand.
I don't know why I think this, but I suspect that this might be used more in server-side JavaScript. That's just a guess, because I could see some uses for it even in client-side applications. If you were building something like, I'm thinking, from my first thought was something like a spreadsheet system where you wanted to let people input certain types of expressions in areas of either just a standard row column sort of spreadsheet or something else. You want to let people, I'm now thinking like DSL, domain specific language sorts of things. If you want to let people use maybe some internal function or a nomenclature naming system that you already have internal to your company, you let people express that through web forms. But it feels more like something that we use server side, and I don't know if that's just because I'm thinking of Lex and Bison already being basically server components, or if I just have very limited imagination. It's probably the latter.
Yeah, well, from what I've seen, I think there is support to use it in an environment that is compatible with the CommonJS specification, so I would not be surprised if this could be used, for instance, from Node.js, which is one of those cases. But for anybody that has interest in languages, this could be a very good tool for use in their projects, and I think whoever wants to build a language would be crazy to try to do it manually from scratch, although there is always people that prefer that route for some reason. And the message is given. If you didn't know about this JSON parser generator, you now you know. You go ahead, study it, and probably just don't create yet another Dart language or something like that. That useful.
That is so negative of you. We need more Dart languages.
As if we don't have enough languages to study already.
I don't know how you say it in Japanese. Hi in Japanese. I remember that. So I like doing this to you. I like throwing stuff out in the middle of the podcast that I did not tell you about at the very beginning, and it's actually totally accidental on my part. There's actually two things I'd like to talk about. One is this letter bubbles. Somebody sent this into JS Mag a few days ago and said, hey, could you talk about this? I tweeted it out for JS Mag, and this is letter, letterbubbles.com. And it is it's just a JavaScript game, very basic premise to it, where these little bubbles float from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen, and each bubble has a letter in it, and you just have to type the letter and to pop the bubble. But they start scrolling faster and faster, and it's innovative, it's cool. You can look at the code; it's pretty slick. It's one step short of addictive, and it may be that it's it may be addictive. I didn't play it too much because I thought it might be addictive. So, but it's interesting. I could play for about a minute and a half or 2 minutes, and then my game would be over. But I was impressed with it. It worked in Chrome and Firefox for me just fine. I was just pretty impressed. Anytime I see a good JavaScript-based game, I always have to give props because I can't write them. I mentioned Garodki last month, and I think Artur Sosens actually wrote and said he wanted to work on it with me. I've had very little time. I tried to load up Raphael.js and just do my little spinning paddle. Horrible. I'm just not a visual games programmer person. So I still want to do it at some point. But I would be if somebody else joins me, I would be leaning very heavily on their JavaScript awesomeness because I suck at that.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was just something I did want to pass on. And I think the guy who wrote it, I think his name is Rick. Rick, if you're listening, I'm sorry if I got your name wrong because you wouldn't have paid attention because you wouldn't have known if I'd said Rick and you weren't listening. So that's that. I guess we can return to our regularly scheduled thing. There is one other kind of meta topic I'd like to bring up at some point, but I could save that till you're more settled and I can disrupt you again.
Okay, well, now that you mentioned about your JS magazine, I think it's time to also talk about it, the upcoming issues.
Always time to talk about that. Well, actually, I'm pulling up our list. We actually have We had a lot of things that were on the plate, but many of them have been on hold because people have issues, personal scheduling, vacations, things like that. But let me see one here. Mike Schwartz has been writing for us for a long time on server-side JavaScript. He's walked through Helm, he's walked through Ringo, he's walked through a number of server-side JavaScript tutorials. And he's taking a break from the low-level mechanical stuff and kind of reacting to Node.js in particular, because there was a meme that went around a few weeks ago saying Node.js is a cancer. And this month he's basically writing about his own reactions to that. I won't spoil it for people too much, but he does have a reaction to that. That one isn't done. Artur Sosen, a name very familiar to JS Classes readers, has done a piece for us on transformation matrices, which is very mathematical and kind of above my head, but we do have that. Dino Gambone. Hello, Dino. Dino Gambone has written for JS Mag for a long time. He's written a series on game development, and this month he's actually joining us. This was sort of a deviation for Dino, and he was going to join us on this podcast, this recording of this podcast. We had a scheduling conflict, so it didn't work out. Hopefully he can join us next month. But Dino's contributed a piece, and I think this is going to be at least a two-parter on writing offline web apps. Offline web apps for browsers, mobile, WebKit. He's talking about Windows 8, mobile, iOS, Chrome OS. So how do you go about writing an offline web app? What are the pros and cons and the things you have to keep in mind? That's great from Dino. And David Calhoun always puts together the news for us, so we're going to have some news from him as well.
Yeah, it's from what I understood, are those news that you have on your site is also available as podcast too, right? Or didn't start yet?
He had started that. I don't think he's continually doing that all the time. I'm going to go check I take it back. Because he did it, and then he didn't do it for a bit, and he's doing it again. So, actually, I take that back because it's been a couple weeks, probably 2 weeks. So, he's doing it and then not doing it. He's doing it as and when he can.
Yeah.
There isn't an RSS feed for it, at least on our site right now. We should probably put one up on the JS Mag site, but it's there.
Yeah,
if you want to listen to him instead of just reading things.
Yeah, because... well, this happens to me. Sometimes I prefer to listen because I don't have to stop doing what I'm doing to pay attention to something that is written. So if I could listen to it, it's probably easier than having to read. So if you have a podcast version of your news articles, whether you call it news roundup,
yep,
Oh, it's probably more viable, not just for me, but probably for those that maybe they're in their transportation to their work, their jobs, or whatever they are doing.
And yeah,
sometimes it's more viable to just.
Because when it was first tried, I wasn't sure that he was going to keep up with it, and we haven't talked directly for a while. We email back and forth now and then. I think what I might do is there's a couple of WordPress plugins. This is the blog on WordPress that will create RSS feeds directly of the linked MP3s. So that might make it a bit more convenient for people to do that. Some people, if you just subscribe to the standard news feed, some readers will extract those MP3s and kind of do something with them anyway. But I might make it a bit more explicit. And yeah. By that, I don't mean I'm going to swear in it. I mean... I love it. The word explicit has so many meanings.
Yeah. Well, I think I got what you mean. It would be to add some tags in the RSS feed to make it look like... actually use those tags for iTunes to syndicate.
Yep.
As the categories and so descriptions in a separate tags. But okay. Anyway, I'll add a link in the show notes to your RSS feed, because others would like to follow your news roundup, either written or as in form of a podcast, if there is time for you guys to record it.
Sure.
Okay, moving on now, almost at the end of this podcast, it's time to talk about the latest JavaScript objects published in the site. Michael, do you think would be more worth mentioning this time?
Well, I'm going to go back to an Artur Sosen contribution. I mentioned he's very well known at the JS Classes site, and he has written for JS Mag, and we're hopefully going to make him hopefully going to keep getting monthly contributions from him. But what he did last month was he wrote an article for JS Mag on blurring. He did some blur effects, and that was actually a class contribution that he made to JS Classes as well. Yeah. So he kind of did one thing and got two uses out of it. And it's a pretty neat technique that he's got that will take a raw image file, or actually you can do this effect over regular text as well too, but it creates a blur effect, and he's got ways to make it very, very blurry or just minorly blurry. And the example, you can click on the blur, click on the unblur. It looks like, oh, okay, that's kind of neat. And then when you actually mouse over stuff, like, wow, it's getting more blurry, less blurry. And he describes the technique in more detail in the JS Mag article. So you can look at the code and get it and understand it, or you could actually buy his article and read about specifically how he did it and why some of the stuff works the way it does.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's playing with, I think, one of the newest, or at least something that should be in CSS 3, just playing with some attributes and that in the end give that effect. And I think it was quite impressive. And it was one of those things that we are more used to see in applications, web applications that use Flash movies or...
Yep.
Similar approaches, and in this case, since it no longer uses Flash, it's just regular CSS 3 attributes. It's great because you can make a good impression of something that you want to present in your site using a component like this that manages the changes in the attributes to actually show it with this nice effect. And also talking about effects, on my part, I'd like to also comment on another component by Artur Sosen. In this case, it's a camp icon, the name of the component. What it does is basically to change the image of the fav icon that is used often in the in the bar of your browser for the current page. The fave icon is, I think it was Internet Explorer that introduced it, basically a file in the Windows icon format that can represent an icon in different places. In the case of the browser, it shows an icon. Well, it depends on the browser, but usually it shows in the title of the browser window. And in this case, what this object does is to use an image in the in a canvas object and copy it to change the current browser window icon. Well, although I could not actually make it work in Chrome, it works in other browsers and it gives can give a nice effect if you keep changing the image and producing an animation effect. And this is yet another impressive object done by Arthur Sossins to achieve a nice effect, something that you are not used to see on sites every day. And for those that like these kinds of unusual things, I think it would be very interesting to take a look into this object. Other than that, there were a few other classes, objects published in the site. We do not have much time remaining to talk about them. Just comment.
I'm just going to call out some names. We had Jeff Martin gave he actually improved the an earlier JS poll object, and Jeff Martin, he's from the U.S. Yay, Jeff. And there was at least one other one that kind of caught my eye, which I'm going to dig into a bit more. The Canvas Game Controls, that's Martin Barker from the UK. And that's it's doing some object key press binding and so on. I want to dig into that. And we also had, I'm going to hope I'm going to get the name right, Satyam Kumawat from India had contributed a jQuery form validation plugin as well. So it really, I mean, if we spent a few minutes on each one, then we wouldn't have time for all my other witty banter.
Yeah.
But thank you, everybody that contributed this month and keep contributing. It's great to see the continued innovation in JavaScript classes. So carry on.
Okay. Well, we are practically at the end of this month's podcast.
Not so fast.
Oh, just I thought you were going to leave immediately, but
I've got another 4 minutes. Now, I'd like to just throw out one little thing here. Is that I went to ZendCon last week, out in, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, week and a half, in California, and saw a lot of cool PHP stuff. Met a lot of cool PHP. I mean, saw some people that I've known before. You know, met up with old friends. Met some new friends. From that slight plug, I was able to interview a few people. It's a little bit more of a general web feel, not specifically JavaScript, not specifically PHP or anything. But I've got a few podcasts that will be coming out, interviews, I should say, that will be coming out on Web Dev Radio in the next month. I have to clean them up a little bit, get rid of my swearing and whatnot. But there, I want to just mention a couple of sessions because I didn't get to go to them because they were too packed. The couple that I had wanted to go to when I had time was one HTML5 WebSockets. Scott Maddox was presenting that, and that was beyond standing room only. There were people standing out in the hallway trying to get into that one. But it really, I think, it just proves the hunger that people have for information on WebSockets, bidirectional sockets, you know, to let the browser talk to the server and keep that connection open. I met Anna Felina from Quebec, I think, up in Canada. She presented on JavaScript tools and frameworks. She might be somebody that we should look at getting on the podcast at some point. Really smart, knows a lot about JavaScript, maybe for January or February. Yeah. And Mike Wilbanks, a name that some of you in the PHP community might be familiar with. He presented some mobile stuff on mobile jQuery and syncing and things like that. So a lot of a lot of good stuff there, and it was interesting to see, even though it wasn't a JavaScript conference, it was primarily a PHP conference. PHP is at the heart of a lot of things, but it relies, so many web applications, even in PHP, rely on some great JavaScript on the front end. So a lot of pretty smart people there, and certainly the JS Conf. There's a lot of JavaScript focused conferences, but if you're looking for something that combines a lot of things, I gotta say the ZenCon for PHP people has a good mix of stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was just a little thing. It's still on my mind and kind of fresh in there. I wish I'd talked gone to more sessions. But as at any conference, there's always four or five things going on at the same time, and you can only go to one thing at one time.
Yeah, well, that is interesting. We can talk with some of those people that you mentioned to in the future podcasts to see if they want to comment about the JavaScript related topics that they talked about here as well.
Sure.
Well, I think we're practically done. I understood that you, Michael, have to go to a commitment. So thank you for having me here again.
Yes. Well, thank you for always putting this together. It's great chatting with you. It's great talking JavaScript. Whoosh! Had to get that in there one more time.
Okay.
One more time. Okay.
That's all for now.
Okay, I'll talk to you next month. Actually, we'll probably be... two things, because we probably won't talk before, but for everybody listening in the U.S., have a happy Thanksgiving. And before Thanksgiving, if you're a freelance developer, come to IndieConf in Raleigh. Come to IndieConf.com. Plug, plug, plug. Have to get that out there. We look forward to seeing you there. But for everybody else that doesn't come, have a good Thanksgiving on November 24th. It's my dad's birthday, too, so... Happy birthday, Dad, if you're listening.
So it's always a good day to organize an event.
We're right before Thanksgiving, but yes, we're going down. Oh, I shouldn't say that. I'm going down to see my dad as a surprise for Thanksgiving on his birthday, but I don't think he listens to this, so I don't think I'm spoiling a surprise.
I think so.
Okay. Thank you for letting me wish my dad a happy birthday on the podcast, and I will talk to you next month.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.